most reporting. I'm Carol Siegel, I'm the director of the Freud Museum. Thank you all for coming tonight. I'm just going to very, very briefly say a few words about Alice's exhibition in the context of the Freud Museum, and then introduce you to the very distinguished and large panel that you have here in front of you. So, first of all, Alice's exhibition, which we're thrilled to have here and is absolutely wonderful, but is one in a kind of long line of contemporary artists exhibiting at the Freud Museum. And some of you may have been to exhibitions here before for sort of over 20 years. Different artists have been exhibiting here. And as you can see, particularly if you've looked around today at Alice's work, this is very different to most gallery spaces. It's absolutely not a kind of white cube gallery space. And what artists have done here, different artists in very different ways, is respond to the house, to the collections, to the ideas, the works, the writing of Sigmund Freud and Anna Freud. And as I say, Alice is in a sort of long line of people doing this. Alice's work has probably taken over the house far more than many previous exhibitions, and it's the first time that the facade of the house has been used, and used in such an impactful and sort of extraordinary way. And actually, the week when the exhibition was being installed, it became something of a spectator sport for everybody kind of going up and down the road, just the sort of extraordinary vision of seeing these ropes of hair being wound around, and how exactly that was taking place. Alice and Joanna, her curator, I think first approached the museum about 18 months, nearly 2 years ago, and the exhibition has been that long in the making. And one of the things that's been very interesting from my point of view has been seeing how much Alice has responded to the house, and how much the ideas have developed along the way. And what you see here now is very different, I think, from what you first came to the house and proposed 18 months or so ago. And it went on changing, even through the installation process, when there were quite a lot of changes and quite a lot of what we thought was going to be in the house when you started to install, actually changed and things disappeared and new things arrived. And I suspect that's something that you might talk about here. I mean, obviously, the exhibition is, to some extent, taking up a lot of the house, and we've had different reactions from visitors, which again is something that people might want to talk about, is whether or not it's rather, you know, taking up too much of the house, and how do we get the balance between the artist's work and what we have here anyway. I'm pleased to say, I think in some ways, the house is fighting back. If you look at the wisteria outside, it's actually climbing up the hair. So we may never be able to lose the rose. If you are interested also, there is a catalogue of the exhibition. If you haven't seen it, it is available here, and you could buy it after tonight's talk. But really, again, just to say how thrilled we are to have Alice's exhibition, and how much we're looking forward to hearing more about your work tonight. And just to introduce the panel, there's Alice Anderson, the artist, Joanna Walker, who's been curating the exhibition since the start and was very much involved in the development here, Stephanie Rosenthal, chief curator from Hayward Gallery, and Darian Leader, who's, again, probably well known to many of you here, psychoanalyst, author, art critic, and in the front row, Ivan Wald, deputy director here at the Freud Museum, who's going to be moderating the discussion. So, thank you.
Hardly know where to start. I mean, we should all go home because it's explained now. The first thing I thought, I mean, I have a worksheet for students, and before one of the questions, I put a little quote from a children's author called Roald Dahl, and the quote is, and it's about your exhibition here, and the quote is, "You may think you know this story, you don't. The real one's much more gory." But I think now I've got this answer, you know, so I need to check. Maybe perhaps we could start, if you could just say a few words about the similarity of the themes between the film and the exhibition that we have at the museum.
But that was the first time, but because before that I've done the first puppet. It was done here in London, and I started to make pictures with that puppet because it was a bit threatening. And then I've, as I was explaining earlier on, I've a great friend of mine gave me this book called The Dollar's Day, and there's very interesting pictures in it. And I started to make up my own stories, to invent something. And that was the first time that I was really playing with the doll. And this is the first film, and it's a series. And now I'm up to make the third one. And it's, so that's really the starting point. So that's why I guess it was shown.
Just perhaps invite Darian to respond to the name of the father.
But actually, that's interesting what you're saying, the name of the father, because when I've put that name, of course, that was not my intention to put like, it was really because of the story, the name of the father, father's name. But of course, it's so ambiguous.
Yeah, it's a film that I've seen many times now, and each time learn something new and see something new in it. And I think we've done an event before just around that film. So, I mean, it's difficult to make an interpretation of the film, and I don't want to do that. But it's interesting in terms of when the film was made and today, if you look at the press about Addis's work, it's very peculiar that there's been a kind of change in the way that people talk about your work, in print at least, and on the web, that it's becoming more and more biographical, that people are explaining your work more and more in terms of what they assume is known about your life, and that, you know, bits of information that are knocking around in the catalogues and the web. And it's being used more and more to explain, you know, this part of the film references this moment in your life, as if it's all a kind of biography. And again, it's something which is very interesting in terms of art discourse, particularly about female artists, the way in which it's so often reduced to biography in a way which I think you'll find a lot less with male artists. If you look at, you know, who's tried to interpret Damien Hirst's spin paintings in terms of his childhood, no one. But then, you know, all of Alice's work, does it invite biographical approaches, or is the biographical approach in a way an attempt to make sense of it? And in a way you can see that reflexively elaborated within the film itself. Since one of the very interesting aspects of this film is the fact that at what point does a story enter into the four chapters of the film? Usually, you know, if you see this, you don't know, let's say, about the life of the artist, you haven't read the biographical info, you can make your own interpretations of what it's about, and there's plenty of ambiguity and equivocation in the film. But the one point in the film when a narrative is introduced is when the father comes along, as if he's in the role of a kind of interpreter, because he comes along and he gives an explanation, he gives a story. And without wanting really to comment more on the film, I think it's very interesting to see that part of Alice's film as something that's echoed in some of the critical responses to Alice's work, where in a way the approach just repeats the gesture of the father as coming in and introducing a story to explain things.
I think the idea of autofiction is interesting in relation to your work, and I know you've described your work in relation to that term. I mean, do you want to maybe explain a little bit about what you mean?
Yeah, well, when I'm referring to autofiction, because at some point I can see how an autobiography can be purely fiction. It's not, I don't think it's, the truth discourse is more close to, I don't know how to explain that, but I think that the truth can hide somewhere else. And also when you remember things, you tell things, you think you're telling the right thing or the truth. But of course, as soon as you remember things, then you're reimagining things. So everything is changing. It's constantly changing. And it's very creative in a way.
And memory is so important in your work generally. And you play on it in this exhibition as well. The idea that memory is creative, in a way, like you were saying, every time you remember something from your past, you're almost recreating it, and it is like fiction.
Yeah, it's a good base, but I think it's for many artists, it's the same.
that the exhibition you have here with the title Childhood Ritual and then the text which introduces the exhibition, it does give a story. It does relate back to, and it has a kind of sense of veracity, and people come and they you know, which is why I tried to locate to somewhere else in something more gory for my students, you know, because there's one part of the exhibition which cuts across the idea of separation from the parents initiating this response with the unweaving and, you know, wrapping up the cloth, and that's the little video which produces this very kind of gory image, really, of the finger and the kind of almost like a gangrenous thing, you know, and that has lots of resonances. So I wonder why you chose to tell that particular story for this exhibition in terms of the parents going away and the childhood rituals being in response to that. Was that just part of the fiction? Or?
I mean, we were in the studio with Joanna and we were talking about the performances I make when I wing things around parts of my body, and because I come from the performances, that's how it really started. And then I started to kind of tell Joanna, and then we decided maybe, yeah, let's keep it, but that was kind of...
So it wasn't really you that made that as a kind of explanation of the work?
We kind of, you know, when you're in the studio with an artist, you know that, and it's like, oh yeah, yeah, let's put that, and let's, you know, you kind of, you recreating something, but I don't know if it was what you were asking.
Yeah, maybe just it's not how the choice was made in terms of, you know, that bit of text.
I mean, if it was been me, there's no text, because I don't think...
See, I always like to be told what to think when I see some art.
But I think everybody has its own story and its own references, so everybody can actually think what he has to think. But I mean,
and I think it works. What I remember when I came here to see your show, which I think works with your work especially well, is that you invite other people to associate things. So it's not so much about you tell the story right away. I think I thought, thinking about your work, thinking, oh, it's really interesting. I don't have so many questions, but I have so many associations when I see your work. And just coming in this building and seeing the hairs around, and you think right away, oh, that's kind of, it changes the size suddenly in your fantasy. You have that little box where you think, oh, the house becomes suddenly a puppet house, and then you have a puppet inside. So that's, I think, something which can lead you somewhere. But then you have to maybe think about surreal objects. You maybe have to think about Man Ray and how he wraps his sewing machine, and there's something in it you don't really know what it is. It's like something you can't tell, really. And I think this is something which can lead you really into probably your story, and you walk into someone's mind, literally. And I think this is very, that's why I appreciate your show here, because suddenly the museum becomes your installation. It's not like you do little inventions. It's more that the whole building becomes yours and you're taking it over by just placing the puppets and the threads. So it really works like a mental, you're connecting things with the hair, and then we can go on, right? The hair is the body. So I think there's so many things where you suddenly think, oh, the house really becomes alive, and kind of you think into walking into something, which is kind of, I think, very beautiful. So therefore, I think a text sometimes is not very helpful because it stops you. I only read it at the end, so I wasn't aware of it. But you'll just start to think. And another thing I really like with this show is that you're using the loom. Loom, is it loom?
Yeah.
Which is also, I mean, it's in basically art history or artworks. It's quite an important thing when you think about female work. This is a lot related to handcrafts, to craftsmanship, and what basically the women did or should do. And then at the same time, it feels like you're bringing it together with geometric forms and the kind of logical thinking and the fact that it's in Anna Freud's room. And so that must have been an important part for you to do that.
For me, absolutely, this was a very big step. It was a new step, because I really wanted to work with this. For me, it's a machine. No, it's not a machine, but... And then when I started to think of it, quite naturally, the idea of these lines and these things very tight came up to mind. And I started to really build something out of it. And then the series of the grids appears. And now I'm totally into it. I know with the coming project, I'm totally... I mean, this was when I say a step, a big step, or maybe a new direction, or I don't know how to call that. But it was very important to kind of meet with this object and all the meanings, and of course using something kind of part of the body and making something geometrical and kind of masculine in a way, but using something, yeah.
I mean, there's the masculine associations of the grid, or formalist grid, which is in a sense disembodied, and then you have the hair, which references the body. So there's this conflation of these different associations, which is interesting. And the loom, really, I mean, that's where the idea of the grid sort of evolved from, really. And it's interesting that the loom really has sort of, although you think of it as being, you know, always in relation to modernism, the loom shows that the grid had its basis or origins within the feminine craft of weaving, which I think is interesting as well.
But the grid also, in modernism, it's always had the body in it, but people tend to forget that.
Forget it,
yes. I mean, you can think of the most famous use of the grid in modernism, which is Mondrian. You know, Mondrian's grids, and what was happening in his life when he was making those grids. He was more and more obsessed with separating the different foods that he ingested. He was using something called the hay diet, which implies a very, very rigid separation of which foods are taken into one's mouth. And so you can see the grids that he produces as indexing a bodily process, or an attempt to master a bodily process. And in a way, it's one of the things that we learn, I think, from your work with the grid here, is how the body is absolutely a part of that kind of modernist idea, rather than being an abstraction from the body, it really starts from the body.
So did you, for the first time, bring the hair, because the hair is something where you would think about weaving, was that the first time that you bring it together with a loom?
Yeah,
by seeing it. So you, did you ever think about it in that relation to it, or was it...
No, it came absolutely naturally, thinking about red and all the lint, and I don't know how, but it's, it came like this, and it makes so much sense. It's funny when you meet kind of an object and you start to use it, and by using it but for what it normally does, then you have something else, and then you can really use it. It was very, very interesting for that.
It's important for us to work with the loom rather than the obvious choice of the couch, which everybody works with. We definitely, as soon as we came into the museum, that was the...
Yeah, of course. Also because it's beautiful. This machine is absolutely beautiful.
So then downstairs, the web, I had to think about Louise Bourgeois' spider and the fact that she links it with the mother, but also kind of its protection. But here, it feels like you're focusing on the kind of the most important room, probably, in the museum. Yeah. So, but it also has, for me, a bit of an irony in it, but maybe I'm wrong, but kind of that you don't see it right away.
It's all about protection. I mean, when you kind of take a thread and you tie your body up, you feel protected. It's the same with the idea of the house. Each time you're using thread, there is something which goes with the protection. I don't know how to. And so, of course, to use only one with the very fragile, very, very delicate, but it's still something which protects, even when one. I don't know if I'm really answering. Probably not.
And also, it has to be protected as well. I mean, if you can't touch it,
So you're saying also how are they called, power figure?
No, the power figure, yeah.
So basically the wrapping round of that's kind of protection. Not only,
yes, thank you.
Because but it also feels like when you look at it, you do feel like you're really kind of, you can't move anymore. So that's probably the kind of thing of protection.
For me, it's interesting what you're saying, because for me they're really protective objects. And because each time there is a little figure hidden in it, and it takes different forms. Or different shapes, but it's still the protection, or like a little even the parents hanging, they kind of protected, they linked together, and they
Carol was saying earlier that the project changed during since you first visited the museum. Was there originally an idea to do something as well as the web in the
No. It was different also because I like, when I do an exhibition, I like to really work with the space, and like I guess many artists. And here it was very difficult, because of course it's a house, you've got the object, you've already got everything. So when you put something somewhere, then either it looks wrong, or you really need to, you're not like in a room, empty room. So everything everything was quite difficult, actually. Was not, so each time I was like, no, but I'm doing that, but maybe this is not exactly what, how it should be. So I tried to in a way, fit, because the idea of working in the house, that's why I was interested. And I said to Joe, yes, okay, let's do it, because it's a house, so it becomes a different project. So if it's a house, you have to kind of, the object and the idea of what you put in that needs to kind of be like the house was has the character of the house, the object of the house, it has to be,
you have to be very sorry.
You, yeah. Sorry, you no, sorry. Probably don't realise how unusual that is, what you just said, because we've had a lot of artists here and they come in and they want to just put their stuff in. They've got the idea of what they want. It goes in, you know, nobody's going to spend, as you did, hours and hours installing something and then taking it away again because it's not good enough. And then spending hours and hours doing something else. And then taking that away. I mean, it's extraordinary. You know, I've never seen really anything like it in all the, you know, 24 years or whatever.
It's all so, but for me, so it's not work. It's just, I do that in all.
It's a bit like work, watching it. Maybe that's but what was the, you know, because not being very artistic myself, I mean, what was the process by which you decided this isn't it? No,
if I knew.
Is it a feeling then? Is it just a...
It's a feeling, but I guess I'm very obsessive with this, I guess you... I'm very obsessive and very, it's just, I guess it's like when you write, or it needs to feel right.
Yeah.
It needs to feel that it's...
But is it a kind of fit of some kind? You know,
I cannot describe it. I had this when I was doing at All Visual Arts my bobbin. At last minute, I decided that I put one of the bundle across the bobbin and then extend it. But it was not planned. It's just because you just feel the space and you want to, you know, to engage. Yeah. I don't know.
Is it something like that you're getting a negative, some bad feeling for? I mean, I find the exhibition, as many people do, quite disturbing. So, you know, especially in the exhibition room here, I go in and I have a bit of a funny turn. and I think other people do as well. And that sense of, you know, that something with the cage and then the grids and then outside the scene, you've tied it, you know, and it really does has an effect, even though I've seen it lots of times. So what I'm wondering is, do you get a kind of negative effect from something that isn't right? That,
I don't know.
Or is it simply that there's not a positive?
I don't know. I thought it was actually fun.
But probably also because you're saying process is for you really important. Like when you describe how you wrap the house and you say, coming from performance, that the process for you is kind of part of it, which I think is very often in artistic practice, that you don't say, well, just the end, but it seems to be in your case that you're probably, for you, it's kind of also a performative act to do the things or place the objects.
Yeah, also we it's like doing a film, you know, we all there and we kind of have a real battle with this kind of fabric and we're throwing the ropes and we're really twisting it, touching it. It's really using your body, and it's to kind of, as you were saying, to make not an object with the house, but to make like a doll's house, almost, you know, to really play with it. So yes, it's the process of making, it's very important. That's the only, I was saying the other day to Darian, that's the only time where I'm happy making, or it's when I make things, I need to make things, and so that's why I get obsessed, and I want to, for me it's not work at all, I really need it. So, you know, for me to rearrange something, it's totally normal, you know, it's all too...
When you say it's disturbing, do visitors... I've just seen on the internet some young people talking about that room, but why do you think it's disturbing?
Just from the feeling going in it, and I've been in there a couple of dozen times, obviously, you know, since the exhibition's opened, and each time I get a kind of...
Because the daughter is inside the that confinement room, but it's just a moment, you know, it's just... a moment, and every bar represents a year, and it's all about the years. And so, it's for me, I don't see it as something definite. So it's keeps on moving. So that's why I think it's not frightening.
I think I like the idea of you walk into really someone's thought process in a way. And then this room is kind of, I also, when I went in, I also felt a bit like, ooh, because it is that kind of being imprisoned in your own maybe thinking structure or something. Mm-hmm. So I think this is why I felt you're caught up in your own thoughts. Mm-hmm. And I think that is, because then you suddenly think, oh yeah, this is what I am very often, like caught up in my own thinking and not getting out of my own process. So I think that's maybe why it's disturbing in a way. You feel like...
It's like a mirror.
Yeah.
Well, also perhaps something of what Darian was saying about the scale as well. You see the cage, then you see the ropes outside the window. Mm. So that suddenly you're thrown in terms of scale, that we're now in a little doll's house as well as that, you know, so perhaps something about that, sort of uncanny effect on the level of scale.
Yeah, but there's lots of space and lots of hair.
It's not too.
Yeah.
We'll have to find the humour then. We'll go searching. Do update something about the material, the hair.
Well, I think what was for me, I think the one thing I was also thinking about when you talked about the how kind of a female artist is very often more related to his own biography, I do think, I might be wrong now, but the hair is something which is also, I think, very often used by female artists, mm-hmm. in a way. And then when I thought about it this morning, for me it's always, John Berger, I think, wrote also that a woman, I'm not sure if that's even true, that a woman looks at herself always at the perspective of a man. So when you think about yourself, you basically look at yourself, you try to imagine how a man would see you. And I think in these very kind of Rubens paintings or something, where you have the two men, Susanna in the bath, I think that's the English title, isn't it? Susanna in the bath. So you have the old man looking at the woman, and always the hairs are the most beautiful thing. They have these long kind of long hairs going down. And I think you always, so for me it is something which kind of, it's in a very attractive aspect for the man, probably the hair, at least in visual art very often it's used like that. So I wonder if that is something is it for you specifically female, or wouldn't you say that? I don't think it's really in your work, so I wouldn't think, no. When I see the house from outside, I'm not thinking, oh, this is... But then, of course, you have the Rapunzel story, and then, again, it is about the woman trying to kind of get the man up, kind of.
Yeah, like, I guess it's just using thread or ropes or anything you have to kind of escape, could be anything.
But is that changing a little bit in your work?
Yes,
I think it's so. Not just as a medium of escape, but also of confinement?
Yeah, I think so. It does change. Yeah, absolutely.
That's, for me as well, one of the very interesting aspects of your work, that here in the show in the museum, you don't just have a sense of hair, you have a sense of something that's being worked through a loom, through spools, through reels. And the kind of obvious reference, which I think luckily you didn't, it doesn't say it on the labels, is Freud's story, the footnote to Beyond the Pleasure Principle, where he talks about watching his grandson take a cotton reel and throw it away on thread and then pull it back, saying fort and then da, mm-hmm. which is a famous thing which probably most of you are familiar with, and it's kind of talked about everywhere, but it isn't always really presented in the right way. And I mean, Freud's argument is basically that the child is throwing away the cotton reel and pulling it back as a way of mastering the absence of the mother, and Alice, or the labels talk about the way in which Alice would bind threads around her body during her mother's absences. So there's a clear link there. But what's fascinating is that you're totally changing the Freudian idea, or the Freudian kind of paradigm of the game of the cotton reel, because the game of the cotton reel is all about symbolising the mother's absence, or linking the mother's absence to language, to the opposition between the two phonemes, fort and dar. But in your work, more and more, the cotton reel and what's reeled around it becomes less an absence than a kind of omnipresence. Mm. And thinking of also the massive reel that you made, the ABA recently, Bound, Alice has made an absolutely gigantic reel, as if the Freudian bobbin isn't a vehicle of absence, but rather something that's massively present, that's sort of disturbing in the way it intrudes into one's space.
Yeah.
Which, can I just say, it's something, thinking about Alice's work, it it also kind of poses a question to our Freudian theories, because if you take seriously the Alice's inflection of the Freudian story, then you have to question whether it's a given or not that the child can ask a question about the mother's absences. And there must be a difference between cases where a child can use a reel or any equivalent to ask a question about the mother's absences or try and master them, and cases where it isn't possible for the child to ask that question, which will give it a very different clinical picture.
Yeah.
I was thinking about the same story, and when I went back to reread it, what I realised was that Freud's describing the child outside the cot, throwing the cotton wool into the cot, and then pulling it out, which is not how for the last 35 years, that's not how I remembered it. You know, so. But in other words,
it's himself.
It's himself, yeah. So the cotton wool is the object of identification. So as well as symbolising the mother's absence, it's a kind of a triumph of, you know, the cotton wool, to be able to get out of the cot yourself and get back in when you want to. You know, and to have, to make it that point of identification, as you said Alice is doing with her cotton wool.
But I think Alice is doing the opposite. Trying to open up a space to think about what would happen if the cotton reel wasn't a vehicle to symbolise presence and absence.
Right, but I'm saying that in Freud's story, not in Freud's interpretation of the story, but in Freud's story, the cotton reel is also symbolising the child.
Yeah, the subject.
And the triumph of standing up, of motility, of being able, you know, in other words, of doing the work. You know, so the cotton wool is able to symbolise the child as well as symbolising the mother and the presence and absence. I think both things are going on there.
Yeah, but I like the fact that it's going to be presence, yes. Because that's what it's all about, in a way, I think. Yeah, maybe.
Is that your performance at the Chagall Museum?
Oh, yeah. There was something about it. Mm-hmm. Yes.
What was that like for you to perform?
Oh, it was the idea of disappearing, and so we're putting some doll's hair, and at the end I was almost covered. And now I'm doing something else for a film, and then I'm under a very some dust, and it's red dust, and so it's always. This is the same. I guess it's the same idea, but or same obsession, but repeated differently each time. It's no matter the medium you're using, it's just
Do you ever use water?
Water?
Yeah.
No, but I. We just felt the film that you've seen was shot in a water tower, because I've got this kind of not obsession, but with this round room or round object, because it talks a lot about anxiety and closure, of course. And where we were shooting there, it was very interesting because we could feel the weight of the tons of the water, which were behind, above, and it was quite interesting. But no, I never worked with water yet. An artist's life is quite long, so I don't know what I've been doing.
Well, perhaps we could open up questions to the audience, to ask everyone has had the chance to look around the exhibition, look out at it.
Well, I didn't. I came rather late, so I didn't get a chance to look at very much. But you gave an interpretation of the spider's web in one of the rooms downstairs, and you also mentioned that maybe truth is a fugitive quality, and that what one actually expresses about what one's doing isn't actually the reality of what one's doing. And I wonder whether the web represents, in unconscious terms, the fact that a lot of, well, some people would argue at least, that a number of Freud's theories have been superseded, and that the web represents some archaic quality to some of his theories. And I also thought, when I came in, the way the house was bound with the hair, according to Freud, I'm sure I'll be corrected here, but Freud describes certain erotic qualities to hair. It is an erotic metaphor. And the fact that the house is bound with the hair also would represent, for me at least, would suggest that Freud was a prisoner of his erotic theories.
Oh, I'm not going in that direction. That's very interesting.
when you say not going in that direction, no, I mean, what do you say, that you aren't thinking consciously in those terms?
Yeah.
But possibly the fact that you're working in the Freud Museum is affecting your unconscious.
Who knows? Who knows?
It's a question.
No, it's a question. Who knows, yeah. I think when I first saw the house, and I was, maybe it was a time that I was really in the middle of these performances that I kind of replayed. So I thought, yeah, but it would be interesting to kind of use the house as a body, because for me, the architectures are always kind of the starting point of my sculptures or the installation or the film, and I always treated the architectures as a body, and for me, this is a body. And
Freud's body.
Well, I mean, it was Anna's house as well. For me, architecture is really, and you could see it in the film. For me, of course, you're in the round room, but you're inside a body when the person is putting the head inside the holes, and everything is about the body. Yes. So I guess I've treated the house. Mm.
But in the film, it was about the interior of the body.
Yeah.
Mm. So, yeah. But here it seems to be more. I mean, is it? It seems to be more to do with, well, I suppose, a kind of skeletal thing, but some not quite the same way as it was in the film. I mean, this kind of metaphor of birth and then the black hole.
It's, for me, I always thought it's a stupid idea, but these rooms, and it's like a person. It's really like a person, so it was tempting, of course, to use.
You referred then to birth in that house in the film, and then you referred later on to constant fear of awareness of this weight of water above you, which is almost like a metaphor for amniotic fluid. Question again.
One of the things that sort of struck me about the juxtaposition of your work in the Freud Museum particularly was I had never, my own reaction to it was, you're saying that the hair is protection, and I was thinking the hair is a trap, and to feel trapped in it. So what I liked is this play between being trapped and being protected, and how the trap in itself is kind of protecting. And of course, I thought of the spider web to Freud's room as just, you know, wonderfully witty, because it was like entering the spider's web. I mean, and the whole house is like a spider's web, so that I took it all in a very different direction than, but I think the beauty of what your work is that you can go, the viewer can play with it for themselves. They project what they are into it.
I think it's open.
Which is what's wonderful about it.
There is that dualism often with the hair, isn't it? That there's this sense of attachment or longing for attachment, but also that it is sort of, it constricts you. And I think that the name or the title confinement room is quite interesting, because it's a pun on sort of childbirth confinement, but also that sense of it entrapment as well, which is interesting.
Well, the crib is a grid.
Yeah.
I mean, if you think of the crib that you go in, the playpens are grids, or the old-fashioned playpens are kind of grids. But also the feminine, thinking of the gender aspect of it, how women have been portrayed always as these beautiful objects, and the hair was always so glowing. So to use the hair as a trap or as protection, either way, is also very interesting.
Yeah, but
play.
It's always this duality, and I think most of my work is about this power play between the mother and daughter, power play. Actually, for me, the idea of power and this kind of duality is almost playing for one character in itself. So there is always this thing.
I was intrigued by what you said about women artists always being, in a sense, confined to their life story, and explanations being sought in the narrative of their lives. Mm-hmm. And I wonder whether between the two of you, you could tease out something about a contradiction between a narrative and a performance. Because I do think they're two rather separate kinds of acts, and I write narratives, so I'm interested in, you know, what you do when you're performing a narrative, which is quite different. I mean, it's playing against what Darren was saying. So just think about it for me.
Well, but for me there is this truth of you can talk with your or think with your body. When you use your body, there is a truth in a way, and there is something that you can do and you can build out of it. But the narrative, I don't know, what would you say?
What I was trying to get at earlier is that obviously there's a difference between narrative and some kinds of performance or acts, but that in the way in which people talk about Alice's work, there's more and more of an attempt to link it to biography, to link it to a story, to a narrative, which you didn't have maybe 10 years ago. And that's a kind of characteristic thing, you know, in art speak, particularly with female artists, where it has to be linked to the biography as if that's the only way it can be contained, that it can only be structured. And obviously that's something you find more with male writers than with female writers, as you can see from the catalogue for the show with Griselda's essay. But obviously, I mean, again, it's something which comes back to the kind of Freudian question. I mean, what can we learn, in a sense, from Alice's work and from her film about mistaken conceptions of Freudian analysis? People often say, oh yeah, it's about, you know, sort of finding your hidden story, or finding a story hidden behind your symptoms, or accessing some narrative that happened in your childhood, and when you've got there, things will be okay. You kind of find the missing narrative piece and your life falls into place. And obviously, you know, films and plays repeat that cliche. But there must be a difference between what can be turned into a story and what can't. And it's been very interesting in the questions, lots of different interpretations and associations to Alice's work, that it doesn't just generate one story but can produce multiple stories. And isn't the whole notion of performance something that comes from the impossibility of telling a story? Why are people compelled to perform? If you think about the history of drama, isn't it linked to the way in which a truth can't be conveyed through a standard narrative, that people have to find other ways of transmitting some truth, political truth, subjective, personal truth, and they have to find a different space from narrative in which to do that?
Mm-hmm. I mean, I think that's right, and that's why when you were talking about I thought you were making a story, Freud's story, whereas Alice in fact performs it, and so we all sit around making stories of what she has performed for us, in a sense. We're a post-performance act.
Yeah. With the site specificity of this project, there is this temptation to use a Freudian or psychoanalytic model to think about the works. How comfortable are you with that? And how meaningful is that for you?
I mean, I mean, I think my work can be read in many different ways. Maybe this one is the obvious way, but maybe I have some others.
And do you actively consider, you know, Freudian or psychoanalytic models when making the work?
No.
Or is that something secondary?
Yeah. No. Actually, it's interesting what you're saying, because, for example, on that video, it had happened with the title, the name of the father, and you know, I'm going into a direction, blah blah blah, and then. Most of the time it's my friends saying, hey, you know what you have done. And so, of course not. Of course, no, I'm not, I'm not. I don't think I could ever work like that. Be maybe interesting to try, but I don't think I could, actually, because I think it's really something. I'm not sure I'm answering your question.
Yeah, that is
answering the question. Yeah. Does that mean that this building had no significance beyond its architectural form for you?
Sorry?
Does that, what you just said, does that mean that when you were given this house as a stage to construct these pieces, that the house had no significance beyond its architectural form? You said you like to work with architecture earlier on, so, and you divorced, you just said you weren't considering Freudian theory or
But what I do is, I guess I'm absolutely not a theorist. Of course, I have to take on board where I'm working. And of course, you cannot, you know, you have to pay attention to what you do. But for example, here I didn't want to work with kind of the history of the house and the whole. I took it a little bit in purpose. More open. Not sure if that makes sense. What I say, no.
So you were dissociating it from the fact that Freud lived here or worked here.
No, of course you cannot.
No, you were making an attempt to do that.
But I didn't. Also, I think it's like it's for me. It's difficult to you cannot. Of course, you are conscious about it, but you cannot really. You have to work with it, but not. I don't know.
Not become overwhelmed by it.
Also because, you know, I mean, you know, it will be, you cannot, you know. It's like when you work with something too big or you if you think about it, then it becomes ridiculous. You have to know. So if it's treated, maybe the subject and what you do is maybe more open, then you can work with it. And all the theorists, the critics, they can then themselves make the links and the.
Did you say that you worked in the Chagall Museum?
Oh yes, that's well. It was
the one in Nice,
ago.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Then when you worked there, did you totally disregard the fact that the museum was associated with and built for Chagall?
In a way, I have to say yes. Mm. I mean, it's like it's just it was just some beautiful white rooms, and of course you. I mean, of course, you know, and you okay, but then, you know, you just do your work. And
but for me, your work here shows that you're very much engaged with the people living here. Mm. So I think so it's not just the architecture. I think seeing how you subtly engage with the place. So I think the fact that seeing that exhibition is not just thinking, oh, there's a piece, here's a piece, there's a piece, but it really feels like a whole.
Yeah,
it feels
true.
Like you're... So I think in that sense, you really engage with... Sure. What was what, and so not with theory. I mean, you didn't go back and read all the books,
exactly,
but you kind of engaged with Anna Freud and her father living here. And
yes.
So in that sense, I think your work shows you engaged very much. Of course, the Chagall Museum, it's an empty white room. Then it's just a name.
Yeah,
while
here,
it's a house of
it's
someone.
It's a house, so it's absolutely, thank you. It's different feeling. You've got the furniture, you've got the, you know, everything. It talks to you in a different way. Absolutely.
Just to go back to the point that you made about women artists' work often being defined or thought about through biography, I wonder if that is a societal tendency to kind of renege back to that, or if in some way there's a storytelling on the part of the artist which leads critics into thinking that, just thinking about Louise Bourgeois specifically, or Emin, or even Alice's work, and then, I don't know, perhaps we then think about
I think
that
there are lots of artists where it's not the case. I just want to make the case now, through that. I think that I think that Louise Bourgeois is making the connection really by herself.
Mm.
Tracy Emin is making that connection really by herself.
Mm.
Also, Alice, in a way, I must say, you talk about these stories, and then people pick it up.
Yeah.
So I think there are lots of female conceptual artists where you never, ever talk about their biographical background. So I think, therefore, I think you're right, but so I think we could... I think in your case, it's what you say this out of fiction. So you kind of make up a biography, and then you're basically saying, well, it could be this one, it could be another one. I'm just kind of playing with a narrative or something. So therefore, I think it's not...
Yeah.
I'm not quite sure if it's just theory, or if not just also female artists are very honest about taking the resources out of their own lives and talking about it. So I think the artists also put that out.
But how could a male artist not take resources out of their own life?
Yeah, let's say they're just not as honest in talking about it. But what I'm saying is...
You can't say that. You can't say this is the difference. You can't make a set of male and female artists. But what you can look at are the way in which art discourse frames the differences.
Well, the only thing I'm saying, that the examples we are coming up with are examples where you can right away go back to the artist who's basically giving you the hints. I mean, Louise Bourgeois is very clearly...
But the difference is, with Louise Bourgeois, as you know, no one thinks that what she says about her biography is true. Yeah.
But she kind of puts, I mean, she puts it out in
but
the world.
As part of a game, as part of a performance, that she knows that she said very contradictory things about her life, and that some of them, or many of them, she knows people will know to be false. So it's in the same way that Sophie Cowell says lots of things that are obviously false about her life, as part of a conceptual game. But I kind of have the impression more with Alice's work that it's as if you're being pressured more and more to say things about your biography. Maybe you can do something with that, or play with that, or do something performative with it, but as a way of interpreting the work. So you see what I mean? There's a difference between the way in which an artist can use biography to engage in process or performance, and the way in which that's framed by a kind of art discourse.
Yeah, but still it's the question of a male artist using his biography in the same way, false or not false, as a hint. And I'm not, I mean, I think you do it with Paul McCarthy, do people do it, but he would never, he talks about his childhood too, but then I think it's a different, so that's the only thing I wonder, isn't it? I mean, Louise Bourgeois, even, I think it doesn't matter if it's right or wrong, but she kind of wants, obviously, the discussion about it, the same as Tracy Emin. Mm-hmm. So the question is, do male artists want that less?
But can one make a set of male and female artists? Can one say male artists and female artists in a legitimate way? Or can one only do that within a framework, the framework of kind of art discourse, which introduces all its own problems?
I think ideally they wouldn't be separated, but they are, aren't they?
I mean, yeah, but by that discourse, and that's what's so interesting, the way in which the discourse frames the distinctions. I mean, how can one say, you know, that one person's art is more autobiographical than anyone else's? In a way, are Mondrian's grids more or less autobiographical than Tracy Emin's tapestries? You know, how can they be?
Hmm? Darian, I mean, part of what you say is true, but part is actually historically not quite right, because, of course, women did very deliberately, women artists very deliberately did play with their life stories, with their biographies, as part of a kind of feminist moment as much as anything else. And so they did, as you say, you know, elicit this kind of...
As a performance, but as an engagement with discourse.
But partly, I don't think they were couching it as a performance.
But you can't explain that in terms of a kind of natural process. This is what a female artist would do.
It's an engagement
with conditions of discourse.
But they were using the existing narratives around to actually give moment to parts of women's life.
As a performative engagement.
Of course. But at the same time, they've been working with their own lives. I mean, Tracy Emin patently tells you in her early videos that she is...
But why is that more...
So why is that
about her life than a grid?
Because she's actually using language to do
but,
it.
But that's to misunderstand the difference between... it's an old theory of language. Let's say, if you see language as made up of signifiers and signifiers, you can't say that it's more or less autobiographical. Female artists use that as a way of engaging with the conditions of the discourse about women. Yeah? Now, the mistake is to then objectivize that and say that is a characteristic of the female artist.
Of course, I agree with you about that. I'm just saying that it was elicited, and not artists are not all as conscious as you are now, 30 years after this initial set of events and different movements within the art world. So that's why I'm saying I was really just backing up.
Aren't you saying that it's a very typical reading of female artists to use their biography? This is where we're coming from.
I question that.
I think this is the starting point. I'm not saying female artists work a lot more autobiographic. I'm just saying, wondering, is it really true that female art is so much more read through biography? Because no one is saying that when you describe the work of someone and you describe the biography, that it's more about their life than when I describe Mondrian's grid. But if the artist puts it out as part of the work, you describe, I think this is the point with Tracy Emin, so you just have to describe it, basically.
But what does it mean, put it out as part of the work?
Well, Tracy Emin says, these are all the men I slept with, so you write about the piece, and then you say, well, this is the tent where she puts all... So, while Mondrian puts a grit, so I describe, first of all, the grit, so then I'm not saying it's more about her life, saying this is...
But with a title, let's say, Broadway Boogie Woogie, which, again, could be understood immediately as a reference to his experiences of jazz of a particular time in the history of New York.
But you would have to know about that, having researched it yourself, rather than him having articulated it as a way of describing or thinking about the work.
Yeah, but all art involves that, actually, because you can't dissociate the viewing experience of art from its context.
Yeah. Exactly.
But isn't there another issue here which is to do with where Freud was, that the artist we think is somebody different from most of us, and we're interested in their life.
Yeah.
You know, we want to find out. We want, you know, I mean, I didn't ask the question I wanted to ask, which was, do you like swimming? You know, but the point is, that we are interested, and that, you know, that's from the people watching the art. So where does that come from, and is there a legitimate place for that interest?
There are lots of artworks and. And we know absolutely nothing about the creators of the artwork. Lots of Greek sculpture, for instance, but that doesn't diminish the potency of the work. I mean, the fact that we may have autobiographical details about certain artists is interesting. You know, it's interesting, amusing, and informative. But it doesn't make the works in and of themselves greater or reduce their qualities. They have objective qualities, I think. No? Yes?
No, I agree. And on the note of objective qualities, I'm afraid the objective qualities, the time has caught up with us. Yes, why not?
it's about the piece downstairs, the butterfly. I thought it was very different from all the other pieces that are here, because we saw puppets and videos, so it's kind of in action, and all the others, especially in that room, were very, almost like mummies, very still, and the video was kind of very contrasty, Wednesday with all the rest. But what I'm really interested in is this butterfly that you're using in this video as an object that's very symbolic and has many interpretations. How did you think about it? Was it just what it was? What is that butterfly for you?
It's a butterfly. No, but of course, you know, the basics of the butterfly. But I was very much interested in the process in making it. And also when it releases, I think it's quite beautiful, the way it turns and the way it moves. So, but of course you've got all the images that you probably have.
No, I was thinking, I guess I was just watching it, and I was enticed by its beauty and the, you know, the way it was kind of moving, but it wasn't moving in the butterfly way. It was kind of, it was kind of like in pain.
Maybe
in a way,
it's
you
a
know?
Dead butterfly.
I figured. But, and it was like very, you know, this, I've been just reading about this whole like concept of metamorphosis and the kind of, that is painful, and it's a changing process, and it's a, but in a way, you know, it can be very, that metamorphosis could be like something like your ideas about yourself, and you're actually when you're making yourself by your fingers, be like this one state of butterfly. Basically, you're kind of metamorphosing yourself, and it's just for me that just started like a real thread of thought that, you know, like you could imagine yourself like this and change, and you know, it really, really worked for me in that way.
Well, I think that's even a better place to looking forward to the future and possibilities. Okay. Thank you very much. And thank you.